Barna's book, his book, Transforming Children into Spiritual Champions. They are more numerous than the entire Hispanic and African American populations combined. They have more energy than a nuclear power plant and are as confounding as the federal budget. They have tastes as fluid as the Missouri River and dreams that will redefine the future. They are a marketer's pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. They are the most lovable and frustrating beings on the planet. They are our children. The Bible says that children are blessings, and all of us here, I know, would say amen. They are delightful. Innocence, creativity, mischief, foolishness, energy, boundary testing, all of this and more is bound up in the heart of a child. Today we're concluding our four-week series, Faith Family Fusion, and we're going to be focusing on how we can wisely direct children toward maturity and how we can winsomely present Jesus to our sometimes puzzlingly delightful children. When it comes to raising children, few things are more important than knowing them well and loving them well. The Bible is huge on parents knowing and loving their children. This message, like all the messages I've given in this series, are not only to the target audience of parents of children and the children. This is also to anyone who has any kind of a stake whatsoever in how children are raised, which would be all of us. As Judy Blake so well said and the video so well expressed, we've all got a stake in children. They are our future. I think knowing and loving children is at the heart of a Bible verse that many parents know, many parents have memorized, but it may be one of the more misunderstood verses in the Bible. I'm talking about Proverbs 22, verse 6. There it is. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, there are a couple of different ways of looking at that verse. One interpretation of this very well-known verse would tell us that Solomon is instructing parents to direct their children in the proper moral and spiritual path. Most who see this verse in this light will not look at it as a guaranteed lock, but they will understand it is a proverb. It is a statement of the way life generally works. But there's the general sense that if you raise your child to know and love Jesus, eventually your child will know and love Jesus, even if there is some straying in the years intervening. You may have heard that interpretation. That may very well be what Solomon has in mind, but there is another way to look at the verse. And I come to the interpretation I do, thanks in large measure to the most technical commentaries on the Hebrew Old Testament I own. Originally, it was a 23-volume set of Old Testament commentaries by Kyle and Delitzsch. They're German scholars. They wrote in 1872, I Trust Old Things. I remember when it came out, it was really good. The Kyle and Delitzsch commentaries are hugely important, very, very careful to the original languages. These scholars tell us that this verse is not teaching parents to train their child to walk in a godly way, as important as that concept is. Now, they tell us that properly understood, there's something more personal and more individual going on in Proverbs 22, verse 6. The original language, the Hebrew, literally says to train up a child in his way. That is, to train up a child in the child's way. The real gist of this verse is that parents should give instruction to their children according to their children's particular bent. As they are put together by God, so grow them in that tendency. And in one verse, cookie-cutter parenting models just get tossed out the window. One size fits all don't work. Those kinds of models dishonor the creativity of the God who makes children. It ignores the incredible uniqueness of each child. And children are so unique. Parents who have one child will marvel that they've raised that one child for 18 years, and every day there's something surprising, something new. Parents who have more than one child will marvel that all these children came from the same gene pool. Gosh, where'd that come from? So diverse. These wonderfully diverse, unique children are to be dealt with uniquely. One of my favorite trees is the crepe myrtle. Crepe myrtle trees bloom throughout the summer, spring and summer seasons here in San Antonio. They produce spectacular blooms of different colors depending on the tree. Correctly pruning a crepe myrtle takes some skill. An arborist will trim a tree and its various branches according to the tendency of this or that particular branch. Less careful pruners commit what is called crepe murder. Just became aware of that term, and it describes pruners who just come in and they lop off all the branches at the same height, and it creates a monstrosity nature would never have provided. Parents who aren't careful to treat, and they treat all their children the same without regard to each child's individual uniqueness, are just as unwise as that uncareful pruner. And chief among God's commissions to parents is the commission to know each child's individual peculiarities, weaknesses, strengths, abilities, temptations, and deal with their child accordingly. Train up a child according to that you see in your child. Prune them that way. You who are adults, you may remember a time after a success in your early childhood, or maybe sometime even in your teen years, and your parent said to you, a mom and her dad said to you, "You're really good at that. I could see you being a great success in life in that thing." And if you can remember a time when a mother or a father or a mother or father figure in your life said that to you, it probably helped shape your future. Probably inspired a vision within you. They've fueled the path that you're on to this day. How many times have we heard in interviews over the past 2 weeks, Olympians say, "It was my mom, it was my dad," who initially said, "You're really good at that. You could excel at that." Parents have incredible power to spark a vision in the life of their child. My nephew, Travis Kerr, he is going to graduate high school this year. He has a dream. He's going to Texas A&M. He's going to major in aerospace engineering. He's a bright kid. He's always had a real penchant for building stuff, putting stuff together. His parents noticed that early on in life, and Bob and Cindy bought Travis, I think, every Lego set available, everything they could find at Toys R Us. They saw how he was good at putting stuff together, and they pruned his life accordingly. They trained him according to the strengths that they saw in their son. Guillermo and I were talking about this whole phenomenon, and the exact opposite might be the dad who excelled on the gridiron as a high school student. And so he forces his son to play the game despite his son's obvious interests in literature and the arts. That's the way not to do it. The only way to direct our children into the path they should go is to really, really know them. Go to school on our kids. Be wise, keen, perceptive students of our children. And then, Solomon says, when they're older, they'll be well-adjusted, responsible, contributing to their world and in the area of their strength because you train them that way. Now, the New Testament chimes in with some advice similar when it comes to parenting. In Ephesians chapter 5, the Apostle Paul writes to parents. He says specifically to fathers, "Do not provoke your children to anger." Literally, or another way to read it, "Do not exasperate your children." Now, many parents have been exasperated when they read that verse that Paul says nothing about children, don't exasperate your parents. But that would be another verse. And what this verse is talking about is parents' tendencies to exasperate their children. The command prohibits parents from making unreasonable demands on their kids. It can just build up frustration in the heart of a child. If a child, for instance, is given all kinds of extra chores, maybe more than the other children, and it's never explained why. That can be exasperating to a child. Or if there's never any connection between the crime committed and the punishment, that can exasperate a child. Or if a parent is emotionally withdrawn from a child and is cold and insensitive to a child, that can result in anger, bitterness, or the opposite, which is really just the same thing coming out in a different way, a child being just defeated, beaten down. Moms and dads are to work at involving themselves in the lives of their kids in such a way that they don't exasperate their kids. Paul says, instead, you are to bring them up in the admonition, the discipline, the instruction of the Lord, not just looking out for the material, physical way that we provide for our children, but the emotional nurture and the spiritual teaching. That's the way the Bible says to raise children. Now, that's what the wisdom of King Solomon says. That's what the Apostle Paul says. For the next couple of minutes, I want to talk about something way less weighty, and that is just some thoughts from me about this whole area of emotional nurture, loving and knowing your kids, from my own experience as a father. My children did not come gift-wrapped with instructions about how to raise them. Yours didn't either. I wish they had, but other than handle with care and handle with prayer, I really didn't have much of a clue as to what I was doing with my children. Ben's not here. Whew. Of course, he knew that. But I've been the recipient of some really wonderful advice from some very wise adults over the years. When I first entered the world of parenting, a man who was then about the same age that I am now pulled me aside, and Bob Burnside said to me, "Dave, make really big investments in your children when they are very, very young, when they are most impressionable, and when they want you to." It's great counsel. That is tremendous advice. It's never too late to start doing the right thing. It's never too late to start pursuing your children. So if you, say, are here today and you've got older kids, maybe teenagers, and you realize even this morning, I've not been pursuing my children the way I know I should, it's not too late to start. Start pursuing them today. But it's never too early to start doing this either. It is never too early. If your kids are in elementary school, start pursuing them. If they're in preschool, if they're toddlers, if they're one-year-old, six-month-old, if they're newborns, start pouring your life into the lives of your children. You'll never regret those kinds of investments. Make it your aim to be as involved as you possibly can in your children's lives as early as you possibly can. And that particular bit of advice comes with a corollary. A little bit nervous to say this one, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway. I know these are very, very busy times. I ask somebody, how's it going? And usually the first answer is busy, tired. I'm certainly not trying to lay guilt upon parents who are already frazzled and at the end of their wits and tired, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway. If you're a parent with younger children, you must carve out time for your children. Your children need quality time with you, and they need great, great gobs of quantity time with you. Parenting children, you just look at it this way. It only takes one season of your life. If you live to be 75 years of age, and that's kind of young these days, in fact, for me, it's looking younger and younger, but if you live to be 75, you'll only have your children living in your home probably for a third of those years. And believe me, from this perspective, it flies by. Kathy and I one time attended a parenting seminar, and we heard a speaker say, God created time so that everything wouldn't happen all at the same time, so that everything wouldn't happen at once. And if God has ordained that this is the season when you are parenting younger children, pour your lives into them. Give yourselves entirely to the parenting task. One of my favorite Old Testament characters is Nehemiah. Nehemiah was the architect of the rebuilding of Jerusalem in the 5th century BC after it had been destroyed. In the 6th chapter of Nehemiah, He is approached by some of the bigwigs of some of the surrounding nations. He's invited to a really prestigious gathering at Shepharim on the plains of Ono. Nehemiah is right in the middle of rebuilding the walls, and he writes back, actually sends messengers with a message to the hosts of the shindig, and he says, I'm doing a great work. I cannot come down. Why should the work stop? Will I leave it and come down to you? If you're a parent of younger children, you're not going to have time for some things because you're involved in a great work. You are building the next generation champions of Jesus Christ, and you can't stop that. It takes time. It just takes time. The Bible says that emotional nurture, loving and knowing our kids is really, really important. It also talks a lot about discipline. Lack of discipline is very problematic. It was in biblical times. It is in our own day. In the Old Testament, there's a very famous story. Don't feel bad if you haven't heard the story, but it's a great story in 1 Samuel chapters 2 and 3 about a man named Eli. He was a priest, and he had sons who were notorious for being rebellious. They also were priests, and when women would come to offer sacrifice to God, they would attack the women. They'd physically assault them. When men would come and bring sacrifices to offer to God, they would steal those sacrifices. Now, God eventually judged Eli's sons, but what he said to Eli in the discipline was, I'm not disciplining them or you because they're rebellious. You're at fault, Eli, because you never disciplined them. Who knows what the outcome would have been had Eli forthrightly, strongly disciplined them. He may have thought he was being kind to his sons by not disciplining them. But a parent who does not discipline is doing their children no favors. Here, just listen to this verse. Proverbs 13:24. He who withholds his rod hates his son. He who loves him disciplines him diligently. Now, I'm not making a big play here for corporal punishment. I wanted to make sure I didn't say capital punishment. It's corporal punishment. I think in a loving home, there is a place for spanking lovingly administered by a parent who is in control of himself or herself, not abusive. I think there's a place for that at an appropriate age for a child. The point is not the mode of discipline. The point is discipline. Parents who don't discipline their children are consigning their son or their daughter to learn the lessons of life outside the home, where the consequences of disobedience are infinitely harsher. So we are to model our parenting after the example of God. He disciplines his kids, us, so we are to discipline ours. Hebrews 12, those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines. He scourges every son whom he receives. It is his love that prompts him to discipline us. It is our love that prompts us to discipline our kids. And the discipline that we will bring upon and bring to bear upon our children will take one of two forms. It'll be corrective discipline or it'll be directive discipline. Just think of all the things that children need to know before they get out on their own. The glory is, if you're in the role of mom or dad, or if you fill the role of parent, you may not be the parent, but you've got a parenting role in some younger person's life, just think of all the things that you get to teach them. I got a list here. How to groom, the importance of hard work, how to prepare for a job interview, why paying interest is bad, how to shop for bargains, how to change oil, how to keep from getting taken advantage of, how to shop for insurance, the importance of buying quality tools, why it's important to dress modestly. If you don't teach them, who's going to teach them? Parents, it's up to you. It's our glorious job to discipline, and that's a big part of it. Just directive discipline, teaching them how the world works. But there's another part of discipline, and it is corrective discipline. And parents who know their children better than anybody else on planet Earth are in a uniquely perfect position to bring discipline to bear on their children when they stray out of the right path, to direct them back, to direct and redirect them into the way of wisdom. Now, parents are not afraid of their children. Wise parents take their kids on. because they fear the Lord. And that fear of the Lord will free a parent up to confront, to rebuke, to reprove, to discipline. Their love for their kids will prompt them to engage and not withdraw. Now, a parent is going to, throughout his or her life, wrestle to give a two-part message to their children. I love you, I love you, I love you desperately, and no, you can't have your own way. That's really what parenting's all about. I love you, and you can't have your own way. And I want to take just a moment here, right in the middle of this discussion of discipline, to speak to children. Some children are here. Others of you have children, and you'll want to relay this part of the message to them. Kids who receive discipline from their parents, your parents are giving you a tremendous gift. They're doing you a great favor. Sometimes the book of Proverbs is delightful for the way it slaps us across the face. Listen to this, Proverbs 12, verse 1. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge. He who hates reproof is stupid. In our home growing up, we said, don't say that word. Well, there it is in the Bible. What does that proverb say to a child who is resisting the discipline, the reproof, the rebuke of a parent? It says you're being stupid. Your parents love you, kids. When they correct you, it's for your good. When they warn you about something, pay attention. When you hear your mom say, well, I sure wouldn't do that if I was you, listen to her. When your dad says, I don't know, son, I'd think twice about that if I were you, pay attention. He's probably done that. I sure wish you'd pay more attention and choose your friends more carefully. You're not going out dressed like that, are you? Given your recent history, I'm not so sure I'd do that if I were you. Not a good idea. They're telling you those things because they love you. Who gives you food, clothing, and shelter? Parents. Who has known you longer than your parents? Nobody. Who would take a bullet for you? Your parents would. Parents are among the only people in the world who will ever tell you the hard things you need to hear. They love you that much. So you're being really wise when you listen to and take the advice, the counsel, the rebuke of your parents. Wise parenting will involve knowing and loving your child, and it will certainly involve disciplining your child. But for Christian parents, the biggest game in town is directing our children to know and to love and to trust Jesus. There is the thought that circulates among parents, and I hear it surfacing every few years. We just want to let our children make up their own minds when it comes to matters of faith. And I hear that in such an age like ours, when so much is up for grabs and all kinds of things are being debated in the public square as to whether it's right or wrong. Intentionally directing a child in spiritual matters can look coercive. It can look like you're not playing fair. But in reality, leaving spiritual nurture to the culture is abandoning a child to a wild, wind-tossed sea with no rudder to navigate life. To not give spiritual direction, that's not fair. It leads to a state of affairs similar to that which we read about in the book of Judges, when every man did what was right in his own eyes, and that is an intolerable state of affairs in a nation or in a home. So if we are agreed that providing spiritual direction is really important, then who is it who is going to provide the spiritual direction our children need? I know. Let's let the church do it. Now, I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek, kind of as a joke. But I do want you to know that we here at Northwest take very seriously the charge we have when it comes to providing biblical wisdom and teaching to children. You heard Judy Blake, as she expressed up here, our passion for children. Judy's doing a great job, so is Guillermo. They're partnering together. Adult teachers of Sunday school classes are doing a marvelous job with children. It's neat to see they prepare diligently week in and week out. They love the Lord. They love your kids. Awana and the dozens of workers who minister to the dozens of kids who come up here on Wednesday evening, it's great. I watch them. They play with each other. They teach the kids. They have a wonderful time. It's a tremendous ministry. So I think what happens up here at church is really, really important for kids. And you would hope that I think that. But as important as what happens up here at church is, it is nothing compared to what happens in your homes. The church is not to be the primary place of spiritual nurture. The home is. Your home is. The home is where your child is to learn about God's love, His grace, His power. It's where it all starts. On the best week, except for vacation Bible school, a child is up at church 3, 4, 5 hours. Compare that to the dozens of hours they spend awake at your home every week. There's no comparison. As important as I think the church's ministries are, and as much as I and others pour ourselves into the ministries of the church, real life-transforming engagement takes place in the home. Now, I don't know how you as a parent may feel when you hear me say that. You may feel empowered, you may feel energized, you may feel totally overwhelmed. When I first learned by reading Psalm 78 and some other passages that the responsibility for passing on the torch of the faith lay right in the lap of the home, I felt empowered, energized, and overwhelmed. All three. I felt really, really inadequate for being the go-to guy for spiritual nurture in my home. I was not raised in a family of faith. My parents didn't pass on a faith torch to me. Kathy's home was the same. So what do you do? Some great ideas from Deuteronomy chapter 6. When Moses wrote Deuteronomy chapter 6, I started to get the idea that I could incorporate into the daily routines of life being a spiritually nurturing kind of dad. Deuteronomy 6:6. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. In other words, anytime works. Doesn't have to be any big thing. Just as you're going through life, as you're eating dinner together. And I hope you're eating dinner together. At least one meal a week. No, I'm kidding. More times than that, as often as you can, spend quality time with your kids around the dinner table. Great time for bonding and talking. Going to Home Depot on the weekend. Driving in the car for just a few minutes there and back. Or doing simple things like taking a walk through the neighborhood, through a nearby park, where there's no interruptions, electronic or otherwise, and you're just talking. You're listening. Talking about Jesus, sharing life. So parents, just think through the daily routines of your life and think creatively. How can I press Jesus into this conversation, into that conversation? How can I bring Jesus to my children? And then there comes the part of what Moses has to say that speaks of something a little bit more intentional. Deuteronomy 6 again, verse 8. You shall bind them, that is the teachings, as a frontal on your hand, they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. This is where you go out of your way and do special things to press Jesus into your home. You take your young child and you challenge him to memorize a Bible verse with you. You invite your daughter, let's spend just a couple of minutes praying together. You have a Bible study with your kid about some area of interest to him or her. You do it on purpose. Now, this is where a lot of parents tense up and begin to feel terribly inadequate. Start talking about things like family devotions. I remember this like it was yesterday, but when I first started to become I was a parent of one, then two, then three children, we thought about devotions. What in the world is a family devotion? I had no idea. I had no picture of what that might look like. Had no one coaching me as I grew up, and maybe you're in the same position. Maybe you're in the same exact boat, and you have, what do you do with that? Well, what Kathy and I did was we tried stuff. I know that's kind of a technical term, but we tried stuff. Some of it really worked relatively well. Some of it just crashed and burned. But we talked to other parents who were at the same point we were on the parenting spectrum. You know, they were trying this. Well, let's try what they're doing. We listened to Focus on the Family. We read books and magazines. We went to seminars. A couple of resources I just want to encourage everybody to take a look at. If you are a parent, take a look at focusonthefamily.com and family life or familylifetoday.com. Is Family Life? Okay. All right. Trust Charlie and all things electronic. Okay. So, but those websites will give you tremendous ideas as to how to, and we're all looking for how to's, how to put into shoe leather our desires to raise our children to love the Lord. Check out some of the books that Guillermo and I have put back on the table just outside the double doors. Go to seminars. Talk with your friends. One of the things that I want to leave with you today is my confidence that you who are parenting, you're actively parenting right now, you have everything you need to do a great job of raising the next generation's spiritual champions. Absolutely, you can do this thing. And my vision is that you, and you who have young children, or you who have young adults, or you who have already graduated your children out of the home, and you are actively grandparenting, like Clayworth and Smiths and others, and you who are living by yourself, or you who are just with you and your spouse, or you have roommates, that every one of us, no matter what kind of home we are all able to say, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Those words probably sound pretty familiar. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Now, I'd just like for you to stand up with me. We're going to all say that together. Without the verse being on the wall or anything, because you know it as well as I do. If you would just say it with me now, and then I'll pray. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord.